two men enter, but only one can be named champion. These men have faces for radio, but do they have the chin to take a punch?
You want me to hit you?
That's right.
What, like in the face?
Surprise me.
This is so stupid.
Anyone can give a hot take. Everyone has an opinion, but can they fight?
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
It's time for the Killer Bees Fight Club. Let's get ready to... Okay, that's Michael Buffer's lawyers. I'm not going to say the line, Michael Buffer lawyers. I'm not going to say the line. You're so strong.
Better chin than Vince Young. I think that's pretty apparent.
Ooh, boy, sucker punch stuff.
2 days in a row you gone with that joke. You going to come up with some new material?
Yeah, that's the line that I always say, so I could say the same thing. Do you think VY saw it coming?
It looked like a sucker punch to me.
Like he was definitely on the side of him,
and he kind of looked to his left, and maybe he caught it at the very. I mean, literally caught it, but maybe he caught it at the very end when it was too late. But I will say this: I don't disagree with you that it seemed like for that one punch to do what it did to him, his chin ain't. I'm not saying it's glass, but I don't think it's very sturdy.
He's got a glass jaw. Definitely a sucker punch. There's no doubt that it's a sucker punch.
Down.
I just wonder if he saw it coming.
I mean, he didn't have to take a whole lot of hits at Texas. He was standing up going into the end zone most games. So maybe he hasn't had a lot of hits right to the chin there.
He
went down fast. Three fights yesterday in the Killer Bee Fight Club bracket. Sean Salisbury beat up poor Tyler Milner. And Milner never stood a chance. Poor.
I disagree with their voters again. I think they got some of these wrong.
Salisbury beat Milner 74-26.
Yeah, that's wrong.
That's big.
Blowout city. I've seen our voters.
That's just
our
name voters, recognition.
Our voters do vote for name value, and it seems like they vote for age over youth. I have noticed that. The second fight yesterday, here's another example of that. Lance Zierlein blew out Ross Villarreal. Bigger name.
Another bad pick.
Older. He beat him 66%-34%. Just ran away with the vote.
Wow.
And then in the final game, another example of what we're talking about. Glenn Davis upsetting Brian Love Muscle. He beat him 51%-49%. Davis over Brian Love
with one leg
Muscle.
You called it. You guys called it. Jeremy, you said his followers were going to get behind him.
I thought so. Yep. I thought so. So Glenn Davis advancing on to the Killer Bee Fight Club bracket. Three matchups today, the first of which you can vote now at Jeremy Branham. It is the first fight in the Kenny Hand region. Features Landry Locker from the Highway to Hell and Stan Norfleet from Cardiac Arrest. I've never met Stan.
Me either.
I know. What's that?
I haven't met either guy.
I know Landry. Who's arguing for Hugh here?
Well, I was
Brian.
About to ask you if either of you guys knew Stan so you could give a passionate argument
I'll
for that
side.
I'll give
a go because I'd like to go against the guy that he's fighting.
Oh, well, that's fair. And I would lean to that side because Jeremy at least knows Landry. So, Jeremy, you'll argue for Landry Locker, and Joel will argue for Stan.
Okay, Stan's a guy that's coming from the trenches. Stan's he's coming from a place where he wants to just get in and get grimy, and he wants to kind of do what he's supposed to do. He's a guy that looks across to the other corner and realizes there's a guy that's soft as the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man that's going to block another guy if he gets into a conversation and we're both in sports radio. I think that's the kind of guy that goes down with a glass chin and a half. He's quick to throw one out. He's not quick to take one, and that's why I think Stan is the man. He's going to come in with a plan. He's going to beat the crap out of the locker.
He's got very personal, very quick.
Blaker's got bars with Stan.
There you go.
You went more anti my guy than pro your guy, but that's
doesn't
fine.
Matter. Whatever gets it done.
Like, it feels like that was just airing laundry more than giving a take for Stan.
I mean, I enjoyed it.
I don't know what it feels like. I think it felt great for me.
I'm not bad at
it. For me personally, it felt great.
I don't know if it made Stan. I enjoyed it, but I don't know if it made Stan's case. Go ahead, Jeremy.
He's a foot locker. He's going to get stepped on.
There you go. All right.
Landry's taller, so he's got a reach advantage here. He's younger. So he's got a youth advantage here, which hasn't been necessarily a positive for our voters. He's now also a father, so he's got dad strength now, and early dad strength, which is the best because you still it's a combination of dad strength, but it's also a combination of your youth. And those early fathers are the ones that you really have to watch out for. So Landry Locker is going to defeat Stan Norfleet in the first matchup in the Kenny Hand region.
Yeah, Ryan? So Landry Locker is 6'8". He's going to have the reach on
he's
everyone.
He's 6'8"?
Yeah, he's 6'8". He's,
I didn't know he was that tall.
You've stood next to him. That guy is a huge, tall guy. So he's going to have the reach in every matchup, like you said. He's also got the youth, and I'm not going to pick against the Longhorns, so Landry Locker 10'9".
Okay. I thought he was a Red Raider.
Well, there's a little bit of a story there. Yeah, he did go to Texas Tech, but he doesn't claim them as his fandom. He's a Longhorn fan.
Yeah,
ride another bandwagon. Huh?
He's a Tech grad, but he's a Longhorn T-shirt fan.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. The second matchup. Brian got handed a 16 seed. That's how he advanced.
Oh, see, still sour grapes. Look, as the only member of this show who's won a fight, I think I can speak on these matchups with more authority. But go ahead.
Well, I was segueing. It was a segue.
You're segueing by throwing shade, though.
You speak on the matchups with more authority than the guy that made the damn bracket?
Yes, because well, I actually won a fight. I know what I'm talking about. I've been in the arena. You guys are getting run out of here.
Are you ready for the segue now?
I guess.
Brian got fed a 16 seed, and John Granato has been fed a 16 seed. Because the second fight in today's Killer Bees Fight Club tournament features the godfather of Houston sports radio, John Granato, and he pulled a little strings because he's taking on Ben Gary, the producer of PP on the Highway to Hell.
Who?
I have no idea who that is.
That's a positive. If you don't know who Ben Gary is, there's a better chance that he has of winning the fight than if you know who Ben Gary is.
Oh, really?
Is. Brian's probably the closest. I like Ben. Love Ben. I've worked with Ben.
Ben's a very nice guy, but yeah.
What are Ben's measurements here, Brian?
None of them that would make for a good fighter.
He's probably what, 6'1"-ish?
No. I would say 5'11".
5'11"-ish, a buck 20. Yeah.
Who wins the fight between him and Ben DeBose?
Oh, I would take almost anybody in the city over Ben DeBose. That whiny little bee.
I love that, Brian.
Ben Gary, Ben DeBose might be a slobber knocker.
Okay.
Ben Gary would wipe the floor with Ben DeBose.
I wish we had a picture of Ben Gary. Love Ben Gary. Love Ben Gary.
You can find him. Just search his name. His LinkedIn photo will pop up.
His LinkedIn picture, he actually looks a little beefier than he is now,
though. That's true. He's much skinnier now than in that picture.
How much would you say he weighs? Because he's
5'11". I would say 140, 150.
Yeah, he's very, very skinny. Very, very
Why am I thinking skinny. That guy from Road Trip?
It's not a bad call.
Okay.
It's not a bad call.
No, on Road Trip, the real skinny guy that goes and does the dances on stage.
That's kind of Ben Gary, but that guy's taller than Ben Gary.
Okay, who's arguing who here?
Joel, Jeremy, you've actually met Ben Gary, so you're going to have to argue the side of Ben Gary, and that means Joel will be arguing for the godfather, John Granato.
Blankers, go first on this one.
Okay. This is easy. Granato's calling out all the stops. He's bringing in all the peeps. He's bringing in all of his Italian friends. The fact is this thing's going to be loaded. There's going to be threats made if anybody even attempts to take down the Godfather. There's going to be violin cases. There's going to be all kinds of ammunition. And there's going to be no way this man can lose because he is who he is for a reason. And he carries the clout and the pinky ring to prove it. There's no way that anybody takes down the Godfather.
I think I could summarize Joel's take there as Italian stereotypes.
Maybe.
All right.
Whatever works. See Jake Asman. Don't mess with the Godfather.
I wouldn't mess with the Godfather. Go ahead, Jeremy.
As someone who respects the sweet science and has the best interest of my client in mind, I'm throwing in the towel. No mas.
There you go.
Before round one even begins.
Yeah, that's smart. This is a referee stoppage for John Granato. John Granato from the mean streets of Chicago. All the Italian stereotypes, as Joel pointed out. John Granato takes this one over Ben Gary. Easy.
We're making Granato look strong.
He's not afraid to call on those stereotypes either, by the way.
Final matchup of the day. I think this one's going to be another blowout.
Do we even really need to debate it?
Seth Payne versus Adam Wechsler. No, maybe we save Payne votes for the defense for a better fight down the road. Yeah, this is a squash match here.
Yeah, it's a 100%.
Love Wex, but he's not beating up Seth Payne.
Is this the most lopsided round one fight?
The only way that Wexler can win this is if he goes like Bobby the Brain Heenan and then like hides under the rope and wins in like a sneak roll-up.
I was going to say Wex is going to put his track shoes on, but then you can't run and you can't hide. So I think that this
I don't know
is
if he can outrun Seth Payne.
That's kind of where I was going with that. Yeah. I don't think he can run or hide. He's in trouble.
This one's a bit lopsided. Yeah, there's this one. This one doesn't need an argument, right? Let's just go straight to the judges.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's Seth Payne by a knockout. There's no reason to belabor the point.
There you go. All right, that does it for the Killer Bee Fight Club brackets today. You can vote on them right now at Jeremy Branham. First one's up. Second one will be up shortly, and the third one will be up probably around 5 o'clock. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What is the state of the defensive line for the Texans? And did D'Amico give a clue in regards to the offensive line? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, a minute for my friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure. He's a guy that has a plan that can make you get you feel great about your hair again. He's absolutely fantastic. It's not the sprays and the creams and the foam that I always tell you only mask the problem. This is an actual solution to hair loss. It's phenomenal. Doc asked to talk to me one day and said, I just want to kind of explain some things to you, see if the NeoGraft might make sense. I said, all right, what do you got? He said, bottom line is you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head no matter how bald you go other places, and that's genetic fact. I did not know that. So now I'm immediately dialed in. I'm intrigued. I'm interested. I'm listening. The more he went on to tell me, he said, look, I'm going to take some of those follicles, every third or fourth follicle. I'm going to put them where you need them most, in your case, in your hairline in front. And they're going to grow immediately. They're going to stay because he said 95 to 99% of those follicles are not going anywhere. And because they're coming from a place where they never go away, you're going to have hair where you need it. But then in 6 to 9 months, when the hair has a chance to kind of settle in and really lay down the roots and get stronger and longer, you're going to find the absolute best result, and you are going to be ecstatic. I'm like, you know what, Doc, sign me up. Let's do this. I did the procedure. It literally was painless for me, and I came out with a different attitude because my hairline was back. It was phenomenal. It's still there today, and I can't say enough good things about Doc Linville and his staff. He wants to work with our listeners, so therefore, if you go right now to 975hair.com and make an appointment to have a consultation with Doc and his staff, it's absolutely free. It's $150 for people off the street. You get it for free. You go in, ask questions, get answers, get everything explained to you. See if you might be the next in line to get this great procedure. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. Go to 975hair.com.
Live in the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees. Now back to Joel and Jeremy.
Join Gallant and George, the Killer G's, and then the Killer Bees live at the Decoy on Thursday as the Astros season begins. While the Astros season gets underway, you can get $10 Shinerbach, 100-ounce towers, and $2 Mexican candy shots. Go watch the Strohs and hang out with the Killer G's, Gallant and George, and then the Killer Bees this Thursday at the Decoy. Blank and Brian will be out there. Game tomorrow beginning at 6:05 is when the Astros play tomorrow. So that will be tomorrow. D'Amico Ryans was talking at the owners' meeting. This happened over the last couple of days, which this is where the picture of his big muscles came out.
Is it legit? Have we decided on that?
I think it is legit. I was critical of it. I was like, this looks chopped. And then I went out and watched the video of it, and yeah, he's got massive. Mm. I didn't realize his arms were that big.
Yeah, I think like off season, pythons. plenty of time to spend some extra moments in the weight room.
Yeah, he was trying to like. He was also like. I posted a little video of him. He was like trying to cut like cover them up. So I think he's even a little bashful. Like he thinks they're too big. I think.
Hmm.
Yeah,
he's a workhorse.
Penn Murphy. I mentioned that the Astros claimed him off waivers. He's been on waivers 3 times since the end of last season. He is coming off of Tommy John surgery, and he won't be available in the first half of the year. So just want to clarify that. He won't be up with the Astros. They'll have to place him on the injured list, but they'll have to carry him on the roster because they claimed him. So there is that. Just wanted to update that. So D'Amico Ryans was talking about, you know, the new additions, some of what he expects going into the draft and camp and things like that. It's always interesting to listen to D'Amico to try to find hints with what he's going to say, because he's given some stuff away. Like, we're going to draft a young quarterback is basically what he said before they drafted C.J. Stroud. Didn't say who, but he alluded to having a young quarterback. What was the most recent one this offseason? It was boosting up the defensive line.
Yep.
Yeah, it was boosting up the defensive line, and they've signed like 7 defensive ends alone. But they traded away a one tech, and they don't have a real one tech on this team. A couple of journeyman guys. But here was D'Amico, and I'm wondering if this is a clue about how they're going to handle the offensive line. Here was D'Amico talking about the state of the OL.
We struggle with injuries all across the offensive line. And we're just looking for some consistency there with guys being able to stay healthy and everybody being in their spot. I think Titus is one guy I just showed just unselfishly moving over to left guard when he hadn't played guard. We had Kent playing tackle. We had a lot of guys moving all across the board. So, you know, we're excited to see if Kenyon can come back and what he can do for us, how he can compete and show that he belongs in there. Getting Titus back healthy will help us. Laramie is another guy who pushed through injuries and battled injuries all throughout the entire year. Proud of him for pushing through what he pushed through to go out there and play on Sundays. But hopefully our guys can be more healthy and we can have a dominant offensive line.
All right, here's what I hear there. I think it is a DeMeco clue, and you tell me if I've lost my mind, and that happens a lot. 713-780-3776. To me, that is a clue, and that's DeMeco saying we like what we have in-house and we will not be adding anything significant to this offensive line.
No, I heard the same thing, and I heard it kind of take it to the level that I was at with the last couple of seasons before we even got into this season, which is he's done playing musical chairs. He'd like to just see Titus Howard at right tackle. He'd like to see Laramie stay at left tackle. He likes the guys that he has, and he wants them to stay playing their natural positions. Juice is going to be interesting, but I would think Juice is going to be your center. But you look at that, and I hear the same thing you hear. I hear a guy that's going to stand pat and make sure and hope that because of health and other reasons, you're going to be able to have these guys play the natural positions they're supposed to play, and that in itself should make the line better.
Yeah. I don't think that he ever wanted to play Titus Howard at left guard. I think he was just forced into it. Like, mm-hmm. This is our hand. What gives us the best chance? Because, I mean, they either had to play Michael Dieter or Fant. And it's like, do we want Dieter at left guard and Titus at right tackle, or do we want Titus at left guard and Fant at right tackle? Like, they were screwed. It was damned if you do, damned if you don't. Like, pick your poison between those two. So I don't think they ever really wanted Titus to play left guard, but they felt like their hand got forced to having to play Titus at left guard because it gave you your best five. Now, you could argue that it didn't give you your best offensive line because I do believe that, you know, five fingers make one fist type of deal, but he was trying to get his best five guys out there. I don't think he's going to add. I don't think they're going to add a significant piece, which I don't really love, because if you're going into this season as a team that you can knock off the Chiefs, you feel that way, and you know they're not thinking that way. They're just trying to build the best team they can and develop and get better each and every day. Blah blah blah, blah coach speak. But if you're going into the season with Kenyon Green or Jared Patterson as like your contenders at left guard, maybe you throw in Kendrick Green, I think that's a problem. I think that's an issue.
Now, can I ask you, the thing that I'm hearing too is that, because I agree, I don't think they're going to spend any money and go out and find some kind of a bigger name or better positional player at left guard, but I don't think that precludes them from going out and getting one in the draft. I don't think it's going to be in the first round. But maybe they get, we know linemen a lot of times, you know, fall through the cracks, or a lot of GMs think you can get them in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. But can you get a guy that's not necessarily a first or second round pick that could still be in the mix at left guard?
Jared Patterson started games at center out of necessity, and he was a sixth rounder. Juice Scruggs, you traded up into the second, and he started a bunch of games for you. Patterson was like, he held his own, but he was below average. And then Juice held his own, but was below average at left guard. To me, he's a natural center. I hear from that soundbite from DeMeco, like, yeah, we're probably not even going to draft one. Like, this is what we have. And if you're going to go to war with what you have, then you better hope that Kenyon Green's good at football, because we saw Kendrick Green. He was super average. Some people like the idea of Jared Patterson left guard and Juice Scruggs as your center. Okay, like, that's putting a lot on a couple of second-year players, and Jared Patterson hasn't played a whole lot of left guard and has never played left guard in the NFL and was a six-round pick, so he's kind of limited in talent. I don't love that. I think it's ignoring a potential spot where you could be weak on the offense. And they really haven't, other than Joe Mixon, done a whole lot in free agency. I guess you brought back Dalton Schultz. You can throw him in the mix there, too.
But I look at this, too, and I think to the point that you just made, the name you brought up, look, I think you upgraded at running back, and you're expecting to do a lot of running between the tackles. That means that you're going to have to get the most out of Green, and if you don't, then you're going to have to see what's out there, even if it's on a bargain deal where there's got some veterans that, like they found in the past, that can kind of fill some time and do what they need to do possibly at guard, because I don't think they have enough. And I don't think you want another Kenyon Green situation from what we dealt with last year when they didn't have an immediate backup plan, knowing, as Nick Caserio put it, that it wasn't if, it was when Green was going to go down. You don't know what you're going to get out of Kenyon Green, so you best find some kind of insurance policy in case he ain't the guy.
The other thing, too, is like you've talked about improving the run game, not you, but the Texans. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you got a running back that can do that, but you didn't really help out at an offensive line spot that you could upgrade there. And then also you're trying to protect your franchise. You're trying to protect C.J. Stroud. And you have the left guard to me is a big question mark mm-hmm. right now. And it didn't sound like – and maybe they fool us, and maybe they draft, you know, Cooper Beebe in the second round. And it's like, okay, cool, he's your starting left guard. But to me, I just didn't get that read. Here was D'Amico and D'Nico Autry, because we've spent a lot of time, like the signing, $10 million a year, gives you versatility. We've wondered where he's going to fit in, where he's going to play, and D'Amico addressed that at the owners' meetings.
For D'Amico, I think he does a really great job of rushing on the interior. I think so in passing situations, we'll try to move him around to where we feel like he'll be most effective, whether it's on the interior, but also he does a great job as an edge rusher, setting the edge in the run game, but also getting at the quarterback. So I think when you have a guy like D'Amico who can do multiple things, I think that'll vary from week to week of what we're doing schematically with him to try to put as much pressure on the opposing team as possible.
It kind of sounded like a third defensive end to me.
Did it really?
Yeah.
I think he's going to rotate him around.
He said that we're going to try to move him inside in pass rushing situations.
Yeah, for some reason, I just have this feeling.
You didn't set the edge from a three tech, you know?
No, but I also still think that, you know, as much as he wants to be, you know, week to week, schematically creative and move guys around, I just feel like he's going to spend, I won't say a lot of time, but I think he's going to spend time on the inside. And I think that, I don't know, maybe, I'm not trying to put a percentage on it, but I think that he's looking at, he'll be in the rotation for both. He's probably the third pass rusher on the outside, but I think he might play a more significant role inside.
I mean, it's definitely going to be matchup dependent, so I hear what you're saying. It's going to change weekly based on matchup and then, like, game script. If you're up by 14 points and the other team's going to be throwing the ball more, okay, now you can play him with the three tech quite a bit. It sounds to me like D'Amico does like the options. And to your point, he did say he was a really good rusher from the inside before he said anything about the outside. Mm-hmm. So he led with inside versus outside. So I think that speaks to your point a little bit. I like the signing. I think he's a really good football player. I think that D'Amico likes to rotate a bunch of guys. I think he wants eight defensive linemen that he's rotating in and out. I think that they're kind of going to do a one tech by committee with, like, the Settle guy, the Foley guy. There's another one that's escaping me that they kind of signed as well. They brought back Davis. They have Heinisch. No, that's Foley.
Oh.
There was another one that they signed around the time that they signed Settle. I can't remember the name, though. But I think that they're just going to do that. I honestly think that
they're going to. Oh, the guy from Seattle.
Yeah. I think they're going to do that by committee. I think they're going to rotate like three different dudes there and just play the fresh hand, rotate them in and out. If somebody's playing well, ride the hot hand. I really don't think they're going to address defensive tackle.
Not even in the draft?
No, I really don't. Like, not a guy who can be someone. It's just the feel I get. Like, the feel I get is that they've really spent most of their resources in free agency on defense, which is something I wanted them to do. Like, if you go back pre-free agency shows, I'm like, spend the money on defense and draft offense. Like, they've spent most of their money on the defensive side of the ball. So the feel that I get is that they're going to draft skill guys. I think that they're going to draft receiver. I think they're going to add another running back. Because right now they have Mixon and Damian Pierce.
Right.
Like, yeah, I think they're going to draft a running back. Maybe even a tight end. Like, you know, you have Schultz, you have Brevin, you have Quentin Tarantino under contract. So, yeah, but, I mean, best available, stuff like that too. But I think they're actually pretty content with their defensive line. Obviously, you love the DNs. Autry's going to be in the rotation at the three tech, especially in pass rushing situations. D'Amico said that he wants to play 6, 7, 8 guys. They brought back Davis. They have Heinisch. They signed three other one techs that are in the mix there. I kind of get the sense that their defensive line's for the most part done. Maybe they draft one in the middle rounds that can kind of, you know, compete, but not someone that you're counting on starting day one.
Yeah, I think that if a guy falls into their lap, it might be hard to pass on. But I think that there are some significant. I won't say there's one significant area or two that I think they'll be looking at. I think you're right. They'll still look at a wide receiver, but I think corner and safety are where they're going to look at primarily right now, because I think they brought journeymen in to replace a Stevie Nelson type right now. And whether they were drafted highly or not doesn't matter. If you just have played, who you are is how you've played. And how Okuda's played so far to this point has told me that he's not Stevie Nelson yet. So I think that they'll look at those two positions, sure. But if a Sweat falls, or there's a guy that kind of falls into their lap, per se, I still, if I'm them, I still look at an interior defensive lineman.
I'm not even sure they want Sweat, though. Like,
God, he's,
we've heard a lot of,
though. If he's the one guy,
but
that
we've also
just
heard Lance say that he's not a one tech, and they need a one tech. Yeah. So if he's not a one tech, they're just not going to draft a guy that doesn't fit.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, we love the idea of it because he was at Texas and he's got intangibles. I think he went to, did he go to Huntsville? I want to say he might have went to Huntsville. There's a lot of things that, like, you love about the player, but if it just does not fit into your defense, like, you're probably going to cross him off your board entirely.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. I just, if you get a guy that's 365 that can absolutely just bull rush guys on the offensive line, and you know, D'Amico wants to be scheming things from a week-to-week basis, there's a guy that's a weapon that I think you could use, but maybe then they just focus more solely on.
I would love to know how they view him. I would love to know how they view him pre-draft. And we're not going to know the answer to that because they're not going to give away any intel. Mm-hmm. But I would love to be a fly on the wall to see their draft board, to see if they think that Sweat could be a one tech in this defense. Because a lot of people say no. Some people say, well, we think it can happen. He's such a good athlete, such a good player that he's going to make it happen. I am fascinated what they think of him.
Yeah, Mario Edwards was the guy from Seattle that they added to the edge.
He's a D end. I think there was a third defensive tackle, but I just can't remember. I could be wrong too.
I'm looking at the roster.
And they re-signed Barnett too.
Barnett, yep. Mm-hmm.
But those guys aren't defensive tackles.
No. The tackles that they list are McTelvin, Ajim, Khalil Davis, Fadakasi, Heinisch, Tim Settle. That's it.
Maybe I invented that other defensive tackle, because Settle was the guy that was the one that they signed right after they traded Collins.
Jake Hansen?
It's like, and everybody's making the joke, oh, they settled. No, Hansen's a linebacker.
Oh, no. Yeah, but I'm just thinking maybe guys were mislabeled on here. Marcus Haynes from the Broncos, it looks like.
I've never heard of Marcus Haynes.
Yeah.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Brian makes faces on Wednesday. Why is Brian making faces today? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
WTF, why the face?
Time to look back at some of the WTF moments from the past week. It's WTF Wednesday.
WTF to that.
With the Killer Bees.
Blank, I'm Brian, and we are the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Brian makes faces on Wednesday. Before we get into Brian's faces on this Wednesday, someone texted, you say the Astros game's at 6:05 tomorrow? I did say that. It was a bit last year when the Astros played during our show. We would have them start 5 minutes after our show ended. How do we want to handle that this year?
Kind of like the way it creates a ton of excitement and overreaction from our listeners sometimes.
Do you just want to keep doing it?
I think we keep doing it. I mean, we're going to be fair. We're going to still kind of wink, wink it and let people know, like, easy before you, like, totally 100% buy in. But, yeah, we should keep doing it.
I'm cool. I'm cool trolling. I have no problem trolling. All right, Brian, why are you making faces today?
All right, so starting off with the story about Lyft drivers. Jeremy, I know you're obviously on the road quite a bit. Are you someone who has used Lyft on occasion?
Yeah, certainly. Lyft, I try to use Lyft more than I use Uber, actually.
Okay.
Because Lyft gives me 5% cash back with the credit card that I use.
Okay. Certainly a good reason to use Lyft. Well, hopefully you use Lyft different than a Florida man that goes by the name Jeremiah Charles. Because he carjacked a Lyft driver in Miami last month and then drove off in her Toyota Corolla. He started punching her from the back seat until she got out. Thankfully, she is okay. The story gets better. Don't worry. She's not in a ditch somewhere. So she's okay. So, again, his name, full name, is Jeremiah Verdon Charles. How do we know his name? Any guesses?
His Lyft profile.
Yeah.
Yeah, he, so that's exactly right. He ordered the Lyft under his own name.
Oh, my God. Where is he from? Florida?
Florida, of course.
Of course he is.
He's from Florida.
He is.
Yeah. So he stole the car after booking a ride through the Lyft app. And the cops got the information from the driver, And that's how they tracked him down. They arrested him at his home and found the car parked a block away. The dummy denied everything and claimed he hadn't even taken a Lyft that day. But again, they had records. Why? Because he ordered the Lyft in his own name. If that wasn't bad enough, a community center's security camera also got him on video. So,
what a dumbass.
Yeah, there's sometimes the smartest people... we see like movies like Ocean's 11 where smart people try to do crime, but often in reality, the smart people aren't the ones doing crime as evidence.
It's a female driver and he's punching her in the back of the head?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so he's a coward on top of everything else.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think
I would be a good criminal. I think I'd be a great criminal.
So you wouldn't put the Lyft in your own name. Could you at least pass that part of the test?
Yeah, if I'm trying to commit some sort of auto theft, it's going to be someone that I have no connections with and I have zero technology on me.
Yeah, because that's
like,
the other
thing. I'd probably
walk
down the road and, like, you know, hijack a vehicle somehow. I wonder if this was premeditated. I wonder if
he booked it, so it sounds
but it didn't, the theft didn't have to be premeditated.
Okay.
Like, I wonder if something happened in the ride where, like, he got mad maybe and then started punching her and he's like, oh, I better cover this up and just didn't really know what to do. Like, I wonder if he knew before he ordered the Lyft if he was going to steal the car for some reason or if something happened in ride where it just triggered. I would imagine it was premeditated, but we don't know that for sure.
Yeah,
I'm just curious.
By the fact that he basically took the car home, it sounds premeditated. But
what's he trying to do, though? Like, what's he trying to do with the car?
I don't know, because see, that's the thing. We glossed over the simple fact that you mentioned, like, not have technology on you. Whenever police try to solve crimes now, they just look at your cell phone data, see which towers it pinged off of. Even if he hadn't booked the ride in his own name, they would have just been able to look at people who took Lyft rides with her, look at the cell phone towers, and then figure that all out. You can't get away with almost anything nowadays.
Yeah, maybe
that's true.
Maybe he got a text mid-ride that his buddy's robbing a bank without a getaway car and needed a Lyft, and he decided to step in.
He took it literal and got a Lyft.
Exactly.
All right, so another reason I'm making a face today, supposed to be the most magical place on Earth, but a tourist visiting the Magic Kingdom was arrested after, quote, forcefully snatching Mickey's ears from a woman's head because he thought the hat belonged to his daughter, according to an arrest affidavit from the Orange County Sheriff's Office. So this man, apparently his daughter had lost a pair of Mickey ears while riding a ride and wanted to go back to the ride to look for the Mickey ears. This moron apparently thinks there's only one pair of Mickey ears in the world at Disney World. He sees a woman wearing a pair of Mickey ears that looks similar and then starts harassing her and then forcibly snatching the ears off her head, creating a scene until a woman's husband stepped in. The man was eventually arrested and held on counts of robbery by sudden snatching, which I didn't know was a charge, but
sudden
I'm glad it was.
Snatching?
Yeah.
What does that get you?
Robbery by sudden snatching.
That's interesting.
People at Disney are, I mean, it's supposed to be the happiest place on Earth. Until something doesn't go their way. I've seen people in the gift shop fighting over those ears if it's the last ones out there. And you know they've got millions in the back.
That's the point, Joel. There's millions of them. Why does he think this lady's ears are his daughter's?
And when we were there, we saw people like literally tug a warring with the ears because it was the last pair on that particular rack. Well, go 50 feet down and there's another shop somewhere that's got them. But like people lose their mind at Disney. It's crazy. But that's just ridiculous.
Kugblaze on Twitch. Can't hate that, Dad. You do not want a ticked off kid at Disney
That's
World.
Also true, though.
Yeah, like Joel said, though, walk 50 feet, you'll find another pair of ears.
And if you really are hell-bent on finding yours, you can ask around.
We're going to have to challenge Brian to not use a Florida story.
Okay, well, I have a non-Florida story here. A Texas man has legally changed his name to, quote, literally anybody else and announced he is running for president in the 2024 election. Again, his name, literally anybody else. This is
very well played. Very well played. I think he's got a dark horse shot at this.
So the man formerly known as Dustin Eby, he's a 35-year-old U.S. Army veteran and a 7th grade math teacher from the suburbs of Dallas and now has a driver's license to prove his name change to, again, quote, literally anybody else. He said he wanted to change his name because he was unsatisfied with this year's presidential candidates.
Obviously.
Yeah. Obviously. Quote, 300 million people can do better. It is not necessarily about me as a person, but it's about literally anybody else as an idea, he told a local news station. He needs 113,000 signatures from the non-primary voters to get on the ballot. It doesn't look like that's going to happen, according to this story, but he went on to say, we don't have a neither option on the ballot, and this kind of fills that role.
This first of all, is he getting Aaron Rodgers to be his VP?
He's getting literally anybody else.
It's all fun and games when you do something like this, but I saw a story on the news a few weeks ago where the parents, I mean, years and years and years ago, 20 years ago, they didn't have a name for their kid yet. So I forget if it was like to be determined or something like that. And that ended up on the kid's birth certificate.
TBD.
I thought it was like baby boy.
No, it wasn't baby boy, but it was something like that. It was like something very, very generic.
For both of them.
Yeah.
Now the guy can't collect unemployment, and still in the records, he hasn't been able to change said name on birth certificate. It's crazy.
I wonder what his students call him. It says he's a seventh grade math teacher.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
His students call him Mr. Else?
Mr. Else.
Anybody Else? Yeah. I like a good bit. So I like the bit here. I think the bit is funny.
Would you write him in November?
No. I mean, I'm not. I don't talk politics.
I'm not asking you to choose a side.
But I think no matter who you want or you expect or would like to have in the office, you're not voting some guy in because this clown changed his name.
I just don't want to vote for an 80-year-old. It's my only request.
Fine, but this guy doesn't even have a platform. He's just got a cute little name change.
Republicans wear sneakers too. Also, when you tell people you don't vote, if you're one of those people, people get mad at you because it's like that's a right, you know? Like, and you had all these people fight for your freedom and fight for your rights. Like there's a percentage of people that don't respect people who don't vote.
That's true.
So like, that's why I'm not going to say I'm voting left. That's why I'm not going to say I'm voting right. That's why I'm not going to say I'm not voting at all.
I have friends in the military and also people that have been in the military that said the way I was raised and the way I was taught through all my military experience, it doesn't matter who, you know, if they are elected, that is our commander in chief. That's who I follow. That's who I support. That's who I believe.
So they would support a president, literally anybody else.
Yes.
Let's do one more, Brian. Let's do that. I see your notes here.
Yeah,
Bezos? Let's go Bezos.
Jeff Bezos. So Jeff Bezos, there's a quote that came out from him, I guess it was a couple years ago when he actually said it. I'm not sure why it came out now. But Jeff Bezos, apparently he and his ex-wife let their children use, quote, sharp knives at the age of 4 because this is apparently coming from his wife. And apparently it wasn't just knives. He would let them... The kids used knives at the age as early as age 4. He would let them use power tools as early as age 6 or 7 because, quote, I'd rather have a kid with 9 fingers than a resourceless kid.
Oh, you are an absolute dumbass, no matter how much money you make. I don't know what kids he's got and what kind of training they've had, but there's no way in hell I'm letting either one of my kids when they were that age.
I'm about to say, don't you have a daughter about this age?
I have an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old, and believe me, with the rambunctiousness and the ability to have a no fear of pain, there's no doubt in my mind, if you put something sharp in her hand or a power tool, everyone's in trouble.
So you're not handing a butcher's knife to your daughter when you get home tonight?
No.
I'm a fan of this strategy. I think it's part of the brilliance that is Jeff Bezos.
Isn't the kid more resourceful if he has all his fingers?
Yeah.
How do you learn lessons through failures?
Do you want them to learn the lesson by losing a finger?
Yeah, irreversible failures.
It's not guaranteed
like
they're
going to
lose a finger. There's probably a pretty low chance that they lose a finger. They're probably cut themselves.
I don't know.
Probably never have a trouble with
I
a sharp
like
knife again in their life.
I feel like it's 99% with my daughter.
Now, age 4 is stupid. Age 4 is way too young.
Oh, yeah. That's the main point.
But, I mean, you do learn from your failures, so I can understand where Bezos is...
I would just like my daughter to learn from failures that are reversible.
I'm not giving my 8-year-old a power drill. I'm sorry. Like, I'm just not doing it.
How did you get to power drill, though?
Because he said he wants him to use power tools.
All I saw was the sharp knife. I heard the sharp knives.
Yeah, the other part of the quote was they would let the kids use sharp knives by the age of 4 and power tools by the age of 6 or 7.
No. I think they're lying. I don't believe it.
Yeah, because they weren't even watching their kids. It was the damn nanny.
I'm calling BS. BS on this. Like this is like this would be CPS. Like you're not giving a 4-year-old a knife. Like we ate.
Bezos can buy CPS.
What did we have? We had chicken last night. the 11-year-old, the 10-year-old, he was using a knife. It's been one of the first time. He's 10, and he's like kind of like, I'm looking at him from the corner of my eye. I'm like, uh-oh. Like, we better have a plan of what we're going to do.
So this is not just like a butter knife. This is like a...
No, it's
like
a steak knife.
Okay.
But I mean, he's 10 years old. You know, he's of that age. A 4-year-old, they still don't really have control of their hands yet.
They're just as likely
to poke
themselves in the eye.
We're not giving our 4-year-old kid scissors.
Yeah,
not yet.
That's too young. What is the proper age to give him a steak knife?
I think 10's the age. 10 or 11's fair.
All right, 713-780-ESPN. At what age are you giving your kid a steak knife? What's the Texans' weakest projected starter? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN at 92.5. It's time, basketball bettors. It's March Mania. Branham here to tell you about BetUS.com. You know that I only endorse one sports book and casino, and you know what that is. It's BetUS.com. It's where you should be, too. BetUS.com has been driving to the basket for over 30 years, three decades plus of betting. This year, BetUS has an epic three-pointer, a 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. That's right, the industry's craziest 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits, plus 10% gambler's insurance. And even more, BetUS accepts crypto, offering a massive 200% crypto sign-up bonus. Gambler's insurance and crypto. You don't see that everywhere. March Mania basketball can get even more exciting with their live in-game betting. It's also a blast to check out their casino after the game, where you could get a 250% casino bonus. Get started by visiting BetUS.com or give them a call at 1-800-MY-BETUS to learn all about their bonuses and special offers. BetUS, where the game begins.
Now back to the Killer Bees.
What's he saying about bees?
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
I don't know. He said he was, like, protecting the hive.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your resident beekeepers, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Sadly, Jason Statham was unavailable.
I'm a beekeeper.
I can't believe they made a movie like this. I'm in disbelief every time I hear this rejoin. They said they were protecting the hive.
It's a great movie.
Get out of here.
It's a great, great movie.
Let's Rotten Tomatoes.
Strongly recommend.
Let's Rotten Tomatoes.
Please do. That'll strengthen my point.
It called?
The Beekeeper.
The Beekeeper Rotten Tomato. You wanted to guess before I...
It's north of 80%. I know it.
Are you going off of the critically acclaimed or the audience score?
I think that was critics' score. I don't remember, but they're both fairly high.
The tomato meter, like an absolute clunk.
Tomato meter, 71%.
That's solid.
The audience score is 92.
There we go.
I never trust the audience.
You act like 71's a good score, too.
Would you allow the first grade class to pick their teacher?
Hell no.
There you go.
The critic score doesn't matter?
The critic scores matters, yeah. 71% is pretty respectable.
That is a certified fresh, sir.
I don't watch anything below 90 because I'm pretentious.
Here comes the pretentiousness again.
I'm teasing. I'm kidding. Someone texted in, 3311, I worked at a children's hospital and they were named ABCDE, pronounced Absidy.
Wow.
This goes back, man. Wow. Every time we have this conversation, there are so many just misses on kids' name.
Oh, yeah. My mom was an elementary teacher for years. Every year there'd be at least one student there. You scratch your head as to how this kid got named that.
A, B, C, D, E, Absidy.
There were the twins that played basketball a few years ago that were Orangelo and Lamangelo. And if you just break it down, it's Orange Jello and Lemon Jello.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's not a good name.
The kid that went to Carolina that played for the Bulls, it was spelled Jameson, but he apostrophed the J-A and erred to the James, and it was James on Curry. Always a really, really fun one when you're doing a game, and you want to call him Jameson. You're like, it's really James on?
Yeah, pronunciation guide comes in handy.
Yes.
What's the Texans' weakest projected starter? 713-780-3776. Who's it for you, Blankers?
I mean, we talked about it, I think. I think the weakest starter right now, and obviously this could be one of two for me, but I'm going to say Kenyon Green. I don't believe in Kenyon Green, whether it's because of the injury or because he is underachieved. But I believe that with the importance that DeMeco has put on the running game, left guard is a massively important position,
And I don't believe that Kenyon Green, just because he was a first-round pick, is going to be a guy capable of playing like a first-round pick.
Yeah, I have Kenyon Green third weakest here. I had a tough time coming up with my second and my third. My first one's my one tech defensive tackle, and it's Tim Settle. Like, to me, Tim Settle is the weakest of the starters. Maybe you could throw Kenyon Green into the mix there. Maybe I'm buying too much in where he was drafted as opposed to just like actual production. Mm-hmm. I have Tim Settle as the one tech. The one tech I have huge questions about, and I think that they're just going to rotate bodies, quite frankly. My second weakest, I had the second corner spot. Mm-hmm. Whether it's Agreed. Jeff Okuda, whether it's C.J. Henderson, they're kind of the same profile, guys that were high draft picks, that are young, that are borderline bust, that they're hoping D'Amico Ryans can figure out and play at a high level. I did have Kenyon Green third, and then I had Jimmy Ward fourth, and I didn't think he played well that last year, and he was always hurt. So I actually had Jimmy Ward fourth. I guess you could throw in like maybe one of their third linebackers, because Christian Harris, Azeez Al-Shaire, very, very good. But then who's your third right now? Jake Hansen, Henry Toa. They did sign Hewitt today, but he's more of a special teams guy. I guess you could throw him in the mix too. Yeah, I'd probably throw that guy into the mix over Ward. So those
I was
top
thinking
five.
Jimmy Ward.
I'll go one tech, corner two, left guard, third linebacker, and then second safety with Jimmy Ward.
Yeah, I was thinking about Jimmy Ward as well when you were saying trying to find three. I'm like, God, I could find Jimmy Ward and Jeff Okuda right there behind Kenyon Green for me. Cause,
what about Settle?
Yeah, you're right. But again, it's unsettled right now, but I think it'll figure itself 2.8. out between now and training camp.
2.8.
I don't think they're done.
I don't think they're done finding another one tech or another defensive lineman.
I hope you're
one
right. I hope you're right. Great Blankers settle-less joke or whatever. 7137 unsettled joke. 713-780-3776. Brian, what's your weakest starter?
I think you guys nailed the obvious ones. It's left guard. It's second corner. It's, you know, the defensive tackle spot next to D'Amico Autry. If Autry's even a defensive tackle, third linebacker certainly a need as well. I'll go a little bit off the board. Just I think it's a concern, and it seems like people are kind of glossing over it, but I'm not overly enthused about the wide receiver depth right now behind Nico Collins and Tank Dell. Noah Brown had a couple really good games, but he also didn't stay healthy, and we saw how much that position group dropped off with one injury with Tank Dell last year. It went from a strength of the team to something that was a real concern because no one was getting open outside of Nico Collins.
I semanticed it. Like, I thought about it, but like, third receiver, is it starter?
Yeah,
a third wide receiver in a lot of offenses, and we'll see what the Texans run out. And they'll obviously, they probably will be a little bit heavier with the 49ers scheme, but third wide receiver in a lot of systems as a starter.
Yeah,
how much did he play? 60% in this scheme? That might be high. I go 60-ish. 60-ish percent. How many times do you think the Texans played a third receiver last year?
Oh, how many snaps?
Like 11
personnel? Or I would say... Well, the Tank Dell injury obviously changes things, but I would say 55%.
Okay, so we're in 65. The same wheelhouse. We're in this somewhere between 55 to 65. Somebody send us that information. 713-780-3776. So we're all on the same page there. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Kristen Umble has Brian's back on Beekeeper movie. Chris, what's up?
Yes. This movie is actually really good. I actually went into it thinking the same thing. It's not going to be that good. I saw the previews. I was like, oh, man. And then my brother-in-law was like, you got to watch this movie. So I watched it. It's actually one of his best movies he's done in a while.
What's that
like,
saying?
Storyline, action. It's pretty good, man. You got to check it out.
Chris,
give it a chance.
How old are you, Chris?
Say what?
How old are you?
38.
38. Are you married?
No.
There you go.
When's the last time you saw an Academy Award winning film?
Oppenheimer.
Okay. All right.
And that was me voluntarily going into it.
Thanks, Chris.
Well
appreciate
played.
The call. Thanks for having some fun with us. I guess I'm going to have to check it out. Like, if I'm going to talk this much crap about it,
I mean,
I'm going to have to actually
from
check
the critics.
It out.
Come on, JB.
70. If it was like 71% is what makes me okay-ish with checking it out. I'm not a big Jason Statham guy.
Well, it came out in the theaters in December, so if it's not already out for
a low rental cost,
it's got to be pretty close to it.
Okay. What would you say Jason Statham's best movie? He's known for Furious 7,
the Transporter series,
I can't name any of them.
No. I would say the probably Transporter 1 or just the Transporter series in general.
This was part of the marathon you watched on your day off a couple weeks ago.
That should have been what I did. I did not do that, but maybe the next time I'm forced to have a day off, it'll be a Jason Statham marathon.
Stump me with that one, because I couldn't name a Jason Statham movie.
So you haven't seen Death Race? You haven't seen Crank?
No.
Has he ever won an award for his acting ability?
Say, what was that, Jeremy?
Has he ever won an award for his acting ability?
Probably not.
On Nickelodeon. Not.
I'm going to have to find this stupid movie and actually watch it and give you guys a review of this stupid movie.
That 713. Sounds like a great segment. I'm all for that. No joking. Brand new movie reviews.
Where can I watch it?
That needs to be a segment.
Tell me where I can watch it. People are sending in their bad names. We'll read some of these bad names on the other side. 713-780-ESPN. Also, who was the worst coach for a Houston pro team over the recent memory, recent years? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.